knowledge fire.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight.
I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, worship at the cult of Celine's altar, and talk about Alex Jones.
Indeed we are, Dan.
Not as smooth as the first time I got it right.
I know. You're getting there. Mm. We're getting there. It's Harump. Practice. It's work.
Harump.
You know what? A lot of people need to see the process of becoming good instead of just seeing the finished product.
No, definitely. And I consider this part of my 10,000 hours towards getting that introduction.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Also part of your 10,000 hours towards telling Malcolm Gladwell he's a moron.
I consider that my community service.
It's good stuff.
So, hey, Jordan.
Hey, Dan, I have a question for you.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today?
My bright spot today is actually maybe you should go first.
Maybe I should go first.
Might be a little extended.
All right. Okay. Mine's just loud. Okay. As is.
Well, preemptively, what? Neighbors.
Neighbors, fair enough. My bright spot, Dan, is Shohei Ohtani.
Mm-hmm.
Today just hit his 12th home run to win.
Congratulations.
It's incredible. And
is he on the Cubs?
No, absolutely not. No, he's on the Angels. He hit his 12th home run, and he has an ERA around 2.
Whoa.
And he has several. I mean, this dude, here's why
he's
my bright
pitcher.
Spot. He's everything, Dan. Uh-huh. He is the only baseball player on this planet that has ever lived who can reliably throw 100-mile-an-hour fastball and hit 450-foot dingers on the regular. And I have thought about that, and here's why it's my bright spot, is because unlike so many other achievements, right now is the only time in history that anyone has ever done what Shohei Ohtani is doing. And maybe he's the only person who has ever lived out of the 50 billion people estimated.
Mm-hmm.
He's the only one who can do this. That's really, really insane to me.
For some of our international wonks, in baseball, it's very rare for a pitcher to be able to hit well.
No. That's not what it's rare.
But
you can hit
is.
Well. It is rare for a pitcher to hit well.
Yeah.
It is not rare for a pitcher to hit he's on pace for over 40 home runs in a season.
That is crazy.
That's not rare.
No.
That's never happened. Anybody who wants to talk to me about Babe Ruth can shove it up their ass. Babe Ruth hit home runs off of people who threw slower than I do.
Sure.
Babe Ruth is shit. Babe Ruth is garbage. He was a garbage human being who played against garbage baseball
Understood.
Players.
for some context, one half of Major League Baseball as an organization doesn't make pitchers hit. That's how not good at hitting generally pitchers
yes,
are.
Yes. Part of the game was like, these guys are so bad at hitting.
Yeah, let's
we have
not bog
to change
it down.
It. Yeah.
I was going to make a joke about Jeff Suppan, but I decided not to.
No, that's.
I believe famously hit a home run in the World Series
for
the Cardinals.
He did.
Yeah.
No, there was the Cubs reliever. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he was one of the last people to hit a home run in a playoff game as a relief pitcher.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Rare.
Very rare. Yeah, so he's but the point is,
you get to see
there's
him.
There's only
play.
One.
Yeah.
There's only one. Like, how insane is that?
Yeah.
There's only one person.
But I also think about this. Like, you're saying he's on pace for that.
Sure.
And that, to me, like, I just imagine being in that position, being in those shoes. Like, I don't know how you'd handle that pressure.
Yeah,
it's
no,
terrifying.
Totally. I don't know how he could. I don't know.
Yeah.
But he grew up in the Japanese baseball leagues, which if you've never, like, in the Japanese baseball leagues, if you're 8 playing for your team, you have the same amount of pressure as a major leaguer in the United States. I don't know if you know anything about it.
I don't. I have not
looked
into this at all.
They are fucking intense.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Jordan, my bright spot is I made a little trip, long overdue trip, down to the box, the mailbox.
Indeed.
And I have some stuff to take out of the bag. Zip.
Excellent.
One thing I realized, I didn't mention this when it was my birthday because it also included a gift for your birthday. And I forgot when your birthday came around. But our Black Dragon Queen Christy sent a very nice care package.
Oh, yes, of course.
And so thank you so much for that.
Oh, absolutely.
And then I went into the mailbag, and there was some other stuff that was a bit birthday related. Bex sent in some young ginger ale, which I don't know what that is.
That, me neither.
Young gingers, could be a rap name.
It could be Carl Jung's specific ginger line.
Sure. Yeah. Also, I believe Beck sent a pink ukulele, which I'm a little confused by, but I'm excited to try to learn. I was trying to learn a couple chords last night while I was playing around with it, and my fingers are too fat. So I don't know if it's going to work out, but
what happened to those Knowledge Fight guys? They turned into a weird ukulele band. I don't know, but
we could do some cover songs.
Yeah, why
not? Parodies.
Absolutely.
Also,
You Belong in the City is ripe for a ukulele parody.
Also in this was the Sega Mega Drive Classics for the Switch.
All right.
And I've been used to seeing these kinds of collections of old games.
Sure.
And typically they end up not having the license to have like actually good games on it. But this is pretty solid. You got Dr. Robotnik's Mean Bean Machine.
Sure.
Classic.
Gotta have that.
Sonic. Sonic 2. Toe Jam and Earl. Vector Man.
Are you reading them in chronological order?
Comic Zone. Remember that one?
I've never. Oh, shit. I do remember Comic Zone. Wow. The past is far away.
The entire Streets of Rage trilogy.
Okay. Well, that we haven't had in a long time.
There's a whole lot of stuff on there, and it's very nice.
It's been a long time since I've moved from left to right and punched things.
Yeah. There are a couple games that are entirely that. So then I got another thing here. And this was a little bit weird, Jordan. I feel like I'm going to need your help because I think this might have actually been for you.
Okay.
So here, this card came. Okay. Look at the front.
All right. Okay, there is a dog resting his, there's a puppy resting his very cute, very lovable face on top of a kitten who is staring cute and lovable.
Now look at this on the inside.
It says, yeah, we listen. And we have feelings too, comma, Jordan.
Right.
Love, comma, nothing.
Nothing.
Okay.
Now, this came inside a box.
Okay.
They had two mugs, and this is one of them.
Okay. All right. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. All right. Central Intelligence Agency. Sure.
Now, there is a sticker on the bottom that implies that this came from a gift shop.
Yes, indeed.
So, either the CIA is trying to fuck with you and let you know, Jordan, that they're listening and you have hurt their feelings.
I don't understand.
Either the CIA is very sensitive or it's somebody fucking with us. I'm not entirely sure.
All right. Yeah. Dot, dot, dot. Yeah. But who's we?
The CIA, man.
The CIA, but I mean, why would they send me a cute little puppy?
It was from a nondescript address in Virginia.
Oh, well, that would kind of make sense then, wouldn't it?
I don't know. It's it's entirely possible, but I mean, Occam's Razor tells me that it's someone fucking with you. But I still appreciate a mug.
Sure,
I like a nice mug.
Admit how ironic it would be for Alex to constantly claim that the CIA and all important heads of state listen to him, and yet we get very kind, almost downright cute cards from the CIA, letting us know that they are listening.
And that you are being too mean.
I apologize to the CIA, I guess?
Wow.
Is that what I do? Wow. Is that all it takes? It takes a cute kitten and a cute puppy.
Jordan has issued an apology to the CIA.
See, now what they don't realize, it does take both.
For all of our leftist listeners out there that really look at Jordan as this kind of like, oh yeah, he gets it. He's on the edge, man. He just apologized to the CIA.
I would be surprised.
Centrist Jordan.
I would be surprised to know too many leftists who, upon receiving a cute puppy or kitten card, wouldn't be like, I mean, it softens me a little bit just to know that cute puppy. Oh, damn
oh,
it.
Man.
They got me again.
Oh, man. I had the CIA all wrong.
Oh, damn it.
So, Jordan, today we got an episode from the past.
Yes.
We are talking about May 8th and 9th, 2003.
Ooh,
continuing
fun.
Our march. One of the things I wanted to try to do was I wanted to try to keep pace.
Sure.
With 2003. I don't think we're going to be able to do that. That's going to be tough. With two episodes a week, it's a little tough.
It's going to be a hard fight.
But here we are, May 8th and 9th. Got some interesting stuff to go over, some weird parallels with the present, as per usual.
Naturally.
Due to my witchcraft.
You are a witch.
But before we get into this, let's take a little moment to say hello to some wonks.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
So first, Andrew Buckholt, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you. Next, ZZ Pop, thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, ZZ Pop.
Thank you. Next, all hail the cult leader, Celine. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, good muscle Nate. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, good muscle Nate.
Thank you. Next, Jordan's banshee laugh is my bright spot. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next, gone AFK. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, gone AFK.
Thank you. And we got a technocrat to give a little tip of the cap to. So, Mr. Mac Mackington, thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
Crikey, mate, that's fantastic. Have yourself a brew.
How's your 401k doing, bro?
All right, we got to go full tilt boogie on this, Watson, all right? Let's just get down to business. We ain't making that money off that heroin. Why are you pimp so good? My neck is freakishly large. I declare info war on you.
Thank you, Mr. Mac Mackington.
Yes, thank you very much, Mr. Mac Mackington.
Also, before we get into this,
yeah.
this show business,
into
this
the
actual
show business.
Business of the
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
Not show business.
No.
Certainly not.
We've never been in show business.
We have mics we're holding in our hands. We are not in show business.
No.
I got a message from a Jeff, a character named Jeff. And Jeff wanted to get a message out, and that is apparently they have a friend named Alex, who's opposed to the spider leadership. And this is relevant because you're wearing the spider leadership t-shirt right now.
Perfect.
So this this friend of Jeff's is opposed to you.
Okay.
Also, apparently Jeff's brother, Evan, just got into the show. So what up, Evan?
Hi, Evan. Welcome to the wonkery.
What are we doing?
I have no idea. This is just what we've become, I guess.
Welcoming new listeners individually?
Why? Why are we doing this?
I don't know.
Don't you realize what can of worms you've opened up again? Every time you add another thing, it never ends.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
So... Here are a couple out-of-context drops.
Okay.
The first is a little... it's actually a little game I want to play,
uh-huh.
and that
uh-huh.
is Alex or Bill Clinton.
Okay.
I love this country.
Was that Alex or was that Bill Clinton? Do you need to hear that again?
Yes, one more time.
Okay, here we go.
I love this country.
Okay, we can't do this is a stolen news radio bit from 4 years prior to this show airing when Phil Hartman went on as Bill McNeil and did long interviews with himself as Bill Clinton. We can't say that it's that.
I will say that it's definitely not
It's definitely not
it
that.
It is either Alex Jones sounding a lot like Bill Clinton.
Sure.
Or Bill Clinton with Alex's going to break music playing in the background.
I'm going to go with Alex on this one.
You're right.
Oh, wait.
So here's Alex doing an impression of a dude smoking pot.
Yeah, you ever seen the artwork in the Denver airport?
Yeah, man.
It's good to know that the Denver airport will never die.
No. And finally, third out of context drop.
Ooh.
Unprecedented.
Ooh.
Alex doing an impression of himself.
The valedictorian of a school today doesn't hold a candle to my father.
Okay.
Wait.
Little sad.
Your father today?
No, back in his dad's day. That's when people were smart.
I really don't know if that's how anything works.
Nope.
Especially not education or knowledge.
Nope. So we start here on the 8th, and Alex actually begins the show with a story that is there's some mirror parallels to the present day.
It's now coming out that what may have killed that NBC reporter was his smallpox injection. So see, it's mainstream. These vaccines are deadly. You don't have to take them, but the government's trying to set a precedent that you do. By saying, oh, you're crazy if you don't. Well, I guess then 99%+ of doctors, police, and firemen are crazy because 99%+ have refused to take it. But David Bloom didn't, and he's bye-bye. And many others that are taking it are bye-bye. It looks like more than one out of a thousand die that take it. Those are now official numbers, by the way.
First things first, Alex, not the last stat that he cited there. That's a little outlandish, but
maybe.
He's not off on some of this stuff. Mm-hmm. But the story that he's telling about this is missing some points.
Okay.
I was able to find a CBS News article from May 2003, which discussed a proposed plan to vaccinate 500,000 healthcare workers against smallpox, of which, quote, only 35,000 of the targeted workers had been inoculated. There's not good evidence that I can find that anyone was refusing the vaccine, just that the program may have only vaccinated about 7% of the stated goal population.
Sure.
So Alex is saying 99% are refusing the vaccine.
Right.
It's a real decent chance they weren't refusing it, but 1 in 7 is closer than I'm used to him being.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
Like,
Yeah.
93% of the targeted population that they meant to get a smallpox vaccination did not get it.
Sure.
Alex is making up that they all refused.
Right. We don't know how the not getting it went down. It wasn't like we know for a fact.
Yeah.
No, instead, actually 7%.
There's a real decent chance that most of that was just due to structural problems with how the rollout
probably
of
not
the
even
campaign was.
Yeah, not enough people even knew about it.
Yeah. And part of it is most people do not need to get vaccinated against smallpox nowadays. The reason is because, thanks to vaccination efforts made by the people who came before us, smallpox was declared eradicated in 1980. After 9/11, there was a concern about a terrorist group or a hostile government using smallpox as a weapon, and as such, the U.S. government stockpiled massive amounts of smallpox vaccine in order to be prepared for that kind of possibility. But typically speaking, most people won't need that vaccine. The people who do, according to the CDC, are typically lab workers who might be in contact with any viruses similar to smallpox.
Sure.
The push to vaccinate in 2003 was based on fears that this potential terrorist attack, and what was ultimately decided was that it wasn't worth the risk, and vaccines could still be effective after someone was exposed to the virus, so there wasn't much of a need for this. The program was ended early, and only a total of about 39,000 people were ultimately vaccinated. A large part of the resistance to this program was that people didn't buy that there was a real threat, since Bush had been pretty clear that there was no information of an imminent attack, and hospitals were reluctant to participate. In the end, however, through this program's failure, public health preparedness was improved, and even critics of the smallpox campaign credit it with helping us be more ready for the later outbreak of SARS.
Sure, sure.
David Bloom was a 39-year-old combat reporter working with NBC. He passed away on April 6, 2003, while on assignment, reporting from Iraq. It's pretty well understood that the cause of death was that Bloom had developed a blood clot in his leg from spending days on end crammed into an armored vehicle and having deep vein thrombosis. This clot made its way to his lungs and caused a pulmonary embolism, which resulted in his death. In the days after he passed away, a doctor named Brian Strom made a number of comments to the media about the possibility that Bloom's death was related to the smallpox vaccination he'd gotten several weeks prior to his passing. There's no direct evidence to support this conclusion, and Alex is kind of just making stuff up, riffing, and jumping to conclusions here. That said, no medication is fully without some risk, and the smallpox vaccine is no exception. Compared to the horror of having smallpox come back, though, the risk is very minimal.
Isn't it so fucking... It's just so indicative of how stupid people are that the government was like, okay, now, despite not having any idea whether or not they could have weaponized polio or smallpox, would weaponize smallpox, or even have some way of delivering it, we're just going to go out of our way and protect ourselves against the possibility of a smallpox attack. Despite the fact that the overwhelming number of humans have died of diseases that have occurred regularly, and at no point in time have they been like, let's put a lot of effort into preemptive.
I mean, they have.
I mean, they have, but not like, you know what my point is.
It's not like the Bush administration wasn't also getting tetanus shots.
Sure,
like,
sure.
I don't know what you're even saying.
Sure, but fine.
I don't know. I feel like you're just looking for a way to attack.
I'm not looking for a way to. I don't need to look.
Sure. I think when you look at this, it's like it's a terrifying prospect.
Sure,
and I think that maybe there was some chatter of some sort. I would believe possibly they're like, oh, this is something we should be concerned about.
Sure.
Somebody might have a sample of some laboratory smallpox.
Right, right.
That could really fuck things up.
Totally.
I think that maybe if you escalate in your head what the possible threat is, then the idea of a campaign of vaccinating healthcare workers who might be in the front lines,
sure,
or soldiers,
sure,
that makes a certain amount of sense.
Right.
Looking back, we obviously have the gift of hindsight, knowing that this didn't happen.
Right.
And it can look a lot more silly.
Right.
But and even back then, you could probably make a pretty decent argument that it was excessive.
Right.
We kind of understand where the thought process comes from.
No, naturally. But it's just, we've had too many examples of this type of paranoia being the excuse for action, mm-hmm, when it's paranoia that inherently devalues the life of other people, as opposed to paranoia that's like, hey, diseases just come out of nowhere from shit all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's infinitely more important. Instead, it's like, we've always got to be preparing for a war or an attack or someone to try and kill us. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I think I might have misunderstood your point.
Yeah.
And I think your point is fine. And definitely, I think it was indicative of a lot of the, like, sort of public mentality.
Especially in 2003, when everything is an attack.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also think that you can do both.
Yeah.
I think that, and that might be where my head misunderstood what you were saying.
No, like, totally.
If it were a one or the other choice, then focus on...
No, totally.
But I think everybody was kind of, ideally, had their head on both, on a swivel.
Right, looking
around.
No, my point isn't invalid, but it's not necessarily the best way to go about talking about stuff.
I don't think you broke new ground.
No, I didn't start a revolution, Dan.
Anyway, this clip I thought was a really good instance to illustrate why you can't take vaccine-related stories seriously when they come from Alex. No matter what the reality of the story is, Alex is always going to take the story about the possibility of danger, and he's going to report that as definitive, and then he's going to exaggerate it out, and it's like, oh, it's been proven, they've shown it, you know? And it's the same thing that he does with COVID-19 vaccine stories in the present day.
Yeah.
This behavior is consistent, because he is staunchly opposed to vaccines,
right?
Not based on the science of it.
Absolutely. And you can argue, and the problem with it is that the argument of like, look, 20 years ago, this asshole was saying the same lies about different vaccines. And you can see that those didn't come true.
Yeah.
So why would you believe him now? And the argument will always be like, Yeah, but it's a black swan event, you know? Sure, this one was a fake. They want to make you comfortable with their vaccines until they do it. They want to lull you into fall. And you're like, fine, we'll never win.
No.
That's it.
You can't really beat back that thinking.
No.
And I think that if you do are able to get yourself to a point where you recognize that, like, oh, he does do this over and over and over again, regardless of the circumstances, you have to start to ask yourself why. And what is it exactly that is... the opposition to vaccines. What is that about?
Right.
And I think you could probably come up with a couple of possibilities. One is a sort of inclination towards divine science.
Sure.
I guess
sure.
The idea of medical intervention is against God.
Right.
And I'm not sure if I believe that Alex is there, because he's gotten surgery.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, but it is that kind of like, when it happens to someone else, it's very much the will of God. And when it happens to you, the will of God is to save yourself. You know, the Lord helps those who help themselves. But when other people die, it's because it was their time. It was their time to go, Dan. You can't deny them that.
Sure. I'm saying that's a slightly unsatisfying explanation for Alex. The other one that I come up with is the notion and understanding that, like, vaccines have drastically improved the world, the lives of poor people and people in developing countries around the world. And I don't know, a whole lot of Alex's policy positions seem to be about not doing that.
Yeah.
Cutting off foreign aid.
Right.
Those sorts of things are things that seem to be kind of overlap of a lot of his beliefs.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's where the opposition comes from, but it certainly makes more sense than legitimate scientific concerns.
Yeah. When you think about when typhoid spread through wealthy neighborhoods, there's far less like anti-medicine spread around about that shit. It was very much, everybody needs to clean their hands, everybody needs to stay safe. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. So Alex gives a little bit of a spiel at the beginning of this episode, and he talks about, like, you know, hey, man, sometimes the world doesn't make sense, and that's when you need a little bit of InfoWar.
That's true.
Again, I'm Alex Jones, your host. The websites are InfoWars.com, InfoWars.net, and PrisonPlanet.com. If the world doesn't make sense to you, if you wonder why you keep losing your liberties and more factories are shutting down and why the borders are still wide open as the government tells you to give up liberty for security, you'll find the answers right here. You wonder why our government creates Saddam Husseins and creates bin Ladens and arms North Koreas and then engages the American people in these costly and dangerous wars, you'll find the answers right here. You're wondering why police are running checkpoints and why there's cameras everywhere and why your children are being trained how to turn you in for owning guns when your guns aren't even illegal. You'll find the answers right here on this show.
Is it the devil?
It's got to be the devil.
Is it the devil? Is it secretly the devil?
It's got to be something like that.
I'm confused.
I mean, I understand. I think we were all wondering that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, those are correct wonders.
Sure.
There's some
of them are more correct or more valid than others.
True.
Yeah, certainly there are. Hey, it is confusing.
Yeah.
The militarization of police is confusing.
It's wrong.
What's going on here?
Why is this happening?
I don't get answers from InfoWars.
No.
And knowing what he turns into and that the devil is actually behind the globalists.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's just not telling the audience at this point.
Yeah.
That this is secretly just a big religious campaign.
Is this part of God's plan for him in fighting the devil to lie to these people early on in his career so he can kind of like slowly trick them into being the holy warriors that God needs?
Right. A saint isn't going to bring these sinners in.
Exactly.
That kind of idea.
Yeah, yeah.
That might have been a quote from Red Dead Redemption.
God was talking to Saul when Saul was like 9 or 10 in his dream. And he was like, listen, you got to lie to everybody right up until the good time.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really strange to me. And like I've said in these 2003 episodes, one of the things that I'm trying to keep my eye on is like this idea.
How much of the devil?
Does he think he's fighting the devil in 2003?
Right, right, right.
And if he does, then that clip is abusive. And if he doesn't, then his worldview doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I would appreciate it if that clue, yeah.
So Alex has got a headline that's not a headline.
Coming up in the next hour, Eugene police illegally raid homes with a tank, prompts federal lawsuit. Eugene police illegally raid homes with a tank, prompts federal lawsuit. And wild stuff comes out of Oregon, but it's happening all over the country.
This headline that Alex is reading is not from a news story or any kind of journalistic source. It's actually the title of a press release that was put out by the office of Lauren Regan, the lawyer representing the people who are the subject of this raid.
Yeah.
I can understand how this is still a source of information, and it's entirely possible that a lawyer's press release could have stuff worth conveying, but it seems like something that shouldn't be treated as the same as an article in an actual news outlet. Incidentally, this case resulted in the city of Eugene paying one couple $30,000 and another $92,000 to settle their cases, which claimed unreasonable search and seizure, excessive use of force, assault, and false imprisonment. The police contended that it was an instance of them having bad information and believing that they were raiding a drug house, whereas the couples believed that the police got a warrant by lying. Whatever the case, it's not good policing, and even if the intel had all been good, seems like their actions would have been excessive for a drug raid. Anyway, the point here is that in terms of the big picture, that this kind of police action is wrong, Alex and I are in complete agreement.
Not hard.
I still don't support how he pushes the message, though, however, given that he's presenting this biased information from the lawyers of people involved in the story as a neutral headline.
Right.
It's not necessarily the way you would want to go about framing your case, even if your case is something that I agree with.
Yeah. I mean, it would be hard to be on the wrong side of strangers destroy your home for no good reason and face no punishment for
it.
You know, like, that seems obvious.
Yeah, and Alex spends a large portion of this episode talking about this couple's houses that were searched and they were, you know, held.
Right.
And it does become hard to take seriously knowing the present. Like, I do care for these people who had this police intervention in their lives unnecessarily, and they were treated poorly. I just don't. I don't consider Alex a legitimate person to make those points.
Absolutely
anymore.
Not. Yeah.
Anyway,
that is also a really good question about the. I mean, as far as the fighting the devil in the past and the present goes, another like question that raises is. Is this guy that guy, or does he change into this guy? And what does that mean? You know, like, is it possible that Alex and I could have had a conversation in 2003 that wouldn't have wound up with me trying to throw something into his face?
Probably. I bet it is. I bet you would. You might not really enjoy it all that much.
Right.
But
And is that because he's lying to me, or is that because he was a different person?
Yeah.
And does that raise the possibility that I could eventually change into this very monster?
That's actually why we're doing this.
Is this terrifying? Yes. It's truly a nightmare.
That's really the thing that this is all about. Is
but
like,
what do we turn into?
Yeah. Looking at this and being like, what do we have to be afraid of?
What are the signs? Can we get somebody get a whiteboard up
this
with
is a cautionary
checklist?
Thing,
yes,
yeah.
Absolutely.
So Alex starts to read this article, and it's interesting that you bring up this the differences between present and
sure,
like, is this
sure.
the same person?
Sure.
Because he starts to bring up this article, and you can see in this clip similarities and differences. Like, okay, one of the big similarities. He starts reading, and everything he reads, he editorializes
sure,
on.
Sure, sure.
He adds a whole bunch of stuff that's not in the article
naturally.
To the article.
Right.
But a big difference, he says that this was written by a lawyer. He doesn't clarify that it's the lawyer of the people who were in the story.
Sure.
But he does give a clarification that I didn't expect from him.
Let me just read part of this powerful article, and we're going to talk to the lawyer who wrote the story and got some of the other mainstream articles about it. Lauren Regan, Eugene police illegally raid homes with tank prompts federal lawsuit. And in the pre-dawn of October 17, 2002, approximately 50 police officers, I see this every day, from multiple police agencies that are federalized under multi-jurisdictional task force, swarmed residential neighborhood. We saw this in Austin.
You can hear the difference in his voice when he's editorializing.
Yep.
It's
almost courteous in a way. You can feel him almost telling you when he's not.
There is a slight bit of that, but it's still like, okay, I'm going to set out to read this article, then
sure.
I'm going to interrupt myself
sure.
constantly
sure.
with stuff that's not in the article.
No, there's definitely
it's
that.
A little bit dicey, but it's slightly more responsible feeling because
right.
if you are actively listening, you can tell when it's like these are the words of Alex.
Right,
this is his reading voice.
Right.
And
you know why that's a more compelling show than just reading the news, because this is very similar to how some asshole might be reading an article as he's reading it. You know, like if I'm reading a
sure.
dumb article, sometimes I'll read a sentence and be like, these motherfuckers are stupid. And then I'll read the next sentence. You know, this is an engaging way of almost reading the news with your buddy.
I don't fully disagree.
Yeah.
So Alex gets to talking about other places that have been raided.
Mm.
Now it's raiding neighborhoods. In a town in Missouri 2 years ago, AP headline, town searched in drug raid. Folks, this is as bad as it gets.
This was a case from early 2002 where a 27-month-long investigation into an international gun and drug smuggling operation culminated in arrests in a town called Carthage in Missouri.
Mm.
This is a real headline from an AP story, but the use of the words town searched isn't meant to be taken completely literally.
Right.
The multi-agency task force that was working on this extended operation set up some checkpoints to make sure the subjects of their investigation couldn't flee, and then they made their arrests. Again, I'm not justifying this policing necessarily.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that the image that Alex wants to create of cops kicking in every door in this town
sure.
in Missouri looking for wrongdoing to jam someone up, like, that's not accurate.
No, I mean,
that's
admittedly,
the image he wants to create, and it's not real.
Admittedly, when they marched those elephants across the Rockies to get there, I felt like that might have been a terrible idea.
Mm-hmm.
But Carthage.
Right, I
Carthage,
got it.
Carthage, Dan.
I got it.
Carthage, because of...
I was trying to think of a way if there was a, like... A Fitzcarraldo joke I could make.
Oh, yeah.
The elephants and the carrying a boat.
Sure.
But
that could have...
It
I feel like my
it.
Hannibal reference was better than you gave it credit for. It
was, but I think I probably would have enjoyed it more if I wasn't trying to make a Fitzcarraldo joke. and failing.
Yes, yeah. We were working at cross purposes on that riff. Yeah. Yes, I can see
I
that.
I apologize. I should be there for you more. That was on me. Anyway, the point of this, though, is that Alex is completely just fudging this.
Yeah.
But it's
yeah.
a good headline for him.
Mm-hmm.
Meh. Anyway, he gets to talking to this lawyer, and I guess if you put the pieces together yourself, you can kind of make sense of the fact that this isn't a headline. This is the press release word is never used, but you can put the pieces together that this is a lawyer representing the people.
Sure. A not unbiased actor in this circumstance,
yeah,
if you will.
Yeah, and I think that this lawyer seems fairly straight up.
Sure.
I think she's distracted and maybe a little bit bemused by Alex's constant detractions.
That her name was Roberta Barnes gave me some pause, but once I found out there was no relation, I felt more comfortable.
So Alex knows how to arrest people. You should know that.
Okay.
Well, and how you bust somebody is you park down the street. When the perp leaves in the morning, you do a little work. You surveil them for a couple days. When they go to work, you pull them over, you pull them out of the car, you take them back to the house with a warrant, you go in the house, nobody gets hurt.
Right.
But see, that's not fun to suit up at 3 a.m. in black uniforms and feel all tough and go rumbling down the road in your tank. These are all wannabes who probably washed out in special forces. Now they get to pick on women.
Right. And
I mean, this show is a really abusive, psychotic nature to drag a naked woman outside with a black hood on. Go ahead.
So you can tell kind of there that she's trying to respond to stuff.
She's trying to say anything edgewise, yes. Yes.
That kind of is how I would characterize the interview. It's not hostile by any by any stretch, but she has a point. I don't know if she necessarily knows who Alex is. And Alex certainly isn't as toxic an entity in 2003 as he is in the present.
Right.
You might not think twice about an invitation to come and talk about this case that you're passionate about and you want to get attention for.
Yeah, and you don't know going in that it is going to be a life or death struggle to finish a sentence.
Yes.
You didn't know that.
And you don't know that Alex is going to be constantly trying to drive the image of a naked woman being dragged out of her house to his audience because that's visceral for them.
Correct.
Yeah. Whereas you maybe want to talk about...
You're like, I have things to say.
You want to talk about rights.
Yeah.
You want to talk about infringement of citizen civil rights.
Totally.
Yep. So anyway, the interview's not that great or all that interesting, especially, I think, partially because, I mean, I agree with Alex. I don't agree with his tactics.
Sure,
I don't agree with him sensationalizing the story.
Right.
But in terms, like, I looked at the story in normal outlets and the conclusion of the police shouldn't have done this.
Yeah, it's not hard.
I agree.
Yeah.
And I know, because we're in the future, that the police and the city of Eugene did pay out a settlement, and that doesn't, you know, take away whatever these people experience, but it
no five figures is restitution for the cops destroying your home, you know, and your sense of safety forever.
Yeah, there's going to be psychological things that remain.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely.
You know, there's a modicum of justice in a settlement, and no one died, so that's
great.
No one
died. Yeah.
Anyway, the interview ends, and Alex says this, and I just rolled my eyes.
All right, the third hour will be an absolute news overload blitz. I've got 50 articles I haven't gotten to. I will get to them. I will get to your calls, 1-800-259-9231.
He's the same guy.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Oh, boy.
He's setting himself up for failure. Like, if he plans to get to 50 stories plus calls in 1 hour, that's just not possible. If you factor in commercials, he's giving himself like 20 seconds per story. That's not even enough to get through the headlines. He should be more realistic about what he can and can't cover in the time he has, and then focus on what he has the time to cover.
Sure.
It would make for better content.
Sure.
It wouldn't be so dumb.
It does make it, I don't know, what would I say? It does make it far more reasonable to just ignore that in the present, though. You know, it's like a long-running joke on a sitcom, like a Simpsons bit. It's been going on for 30 years. What are you going to complain now? If Alex says he's going to get to the stories and you've listened in 2003, you know damn well he's not going to listen. He's not going to get to the story. So who gives a shit?
Well,
you know?
For me, I'm looking at this like Dr. House.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Like, in the present day, Alex has this list of symptoms. right?
Right, right.
And we go back to 2003.
We got to cross him off the list.
And he's got the same symptom. It's like, sure. All right, that's not part
of
the condition.
That's not part of the disease. Yes, no. I gotcha. I gotcha.
I'm playing diagnostic games here.
Understood.
The cough is not part of it.
Understood.
So Alex has, trouble with quotes. And it extends far beyond Thomas Jefferson.
The globalist mind controllers say that perception is reality.
I am mental.
They create the perception that the military and the police on our streets is good. When, if you investigate, you'll find out it's bad.
So Alex saying that, claiming that the globalists use that quote, perception is reality. That's interesting because that's a quote most famously attributed to Republican strategist Lee Atwater.
Yeah.
A man notable for his intense use of racism as a political tool.
Oh, yeah. What name one big strategy that he helped
it's on the compass. Also, he's associated with the Willie Horton ad.
Sure.
He's pretty notable that in 1984, he became a senior partner at Black Manafort Stone & Kelly, the consulting firm run by Alex's future good buddy, Roger Stone.
Wow.
Perception is reality.
Perception is reality.
Woo!
Man. Jesus.
Yep.
1984, good old Roger Stone looking to his left, seeing Lee Atwater, thinking, I got a bright future in front of me.
Paul,
we're going to do great things.
You and I definitely aren't going to get charged with crimes in 36 years.
Oh, boy. We're definitely not laying the groundwork for all the crimes we're going to do.
Yup. So this was interesting to me.
Sure.
I got to stop saying interesting, but this was weird.
Fascinating?
Sure.
Okay.
Alex has an intense news blitz he needs to get through.
Okay, yes. We're in a full hour of news blitz. I forgot about that.
Listen to this.
Okay.
And I'm sad for our troops that are being used for the New World Order and are being injected with deadly vaccines, who are being brought back here and turned into militarized police. We need to remember what America is about. What makes America America is because it was a free country. Now we're beginning to lose that. We're seeing the shift rapidly. And patriots everywhere need to be veterans in the second American Revolution, or I should say, Restoration. For all the veterans that really gave all, we've had requests for this song. We'll air it, then I'll come back and talk to John in Indiana, or John in Missouri, and others that are patiently holding, and I'll launch into a bunch of geopolitical news and information. So again, stay with us. I think this song says it all. It's not sappy. A lot of people died to defend liberty. That's what that flag symbolizes, is our republic, not a unit of a world empire.
And then Alex plays the entire song of Billy Ray Cyrus's
I was worried it was going to be what I heard it being,
yeah.
And then it was that, and now I'm unhappy.
I would give anything to go back to that moment in time and tell Alex about Miley. Oh my god, it's so weird. It's so weird. He plays a full song as like a shout out to the troops.
And he doesn't sing along with it or
no.
editorialize
he
over
just leaves.
It? Oh.
Yeah.
He couldn't eat a sandwich as easily back then.
That's probably true.
Yeah.
That was bizarre. This format is very strange.
Yeah, that's very weird. That makes me feel deeply uncomfortable.
A lot of people have been wanting me to play Billy Ray Cyrus.
No. No. A lot of people have been wanting me to play Billy Ray Cyrus, and I say to them, no, again.
From everything I understand about Alex's format, song requests. You can request songs. He doesn't play songs.
No, so, he's not a song player.
No.
What a weird, okay.
Very strange.
All right.
So the news blitz doesn't really happen, but Alex does take some calls. And
okay.
One guy, this guy is interesting. He seems to believe that spam,
yes,
messages.
Oh,
right,
yeah,
spam,
not the food.
Spam messages need to be clearly delineated as something with a commercial purpose, because he got accused of spamming somebody and he was just trying to harass them.
Okay, two things, if I can get to them. One is the supremacy clause in the Constitution. The other is this attempted legislation to make spam a felony on the internet. I tried to. Spam is commercial. You know, it's got to be defined as commercial gain and that kind of stuff. Not forcing complicit media to see the pictures.
Well, sir, the White Patriot Act 2 is written. If your email goes to somebody wrong, you get life in prison in a labor camp, okay?
Right.
What?
Well, I was accused of spamming people many times right after 9/11, the Iraqi war. They leave their email addresses in the newspaper articles, and one guy, he shifts his email address so he doesn't have to receive these because he knows that he would be guilty of misprision, you know, if he's alerted to the treason that's going on.
Yeah, so apparently this guy goes and finds email addresses in newspapers and then harasses the people.
Yeah.
And he's worried about a law against spam.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a fundamental misunderstanding of all of the problems with what you're doing.
You bet. You bet. But it's fun.
I mean, I can't believe you got the point that wrong.
Yeah. It's a fun call, though, because you can see the dynamics that are going on and, like, I don't know. That sounds like an Alex Jones listener to me.
They're trying to make a law making it illegal for me to send chain emails to my family. Mm. And that's going to really get in the way of me kneecapping this reporter over here. So we got to stop this chain email law.
It is not spam when I email a journalist 100 times in a day and tell him he's going to go to jail for treason.
It's not spam. It's not spam. I'm not a bot. I'm an asshole.
I sent every one of those messages by hand.
I'm proud of being an asshole.
Yeah. So Alex has one more caller that we're going to hear a little bit of. This person's talking about, so, you know, you got the new money coming in.
Sure.
The new bills.
Yeah.
In the U.S.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people have a lot of theories about that.
Mm-hmm.
And this caller believes
we'll never have Harriet Tubman on the $20 bill.
This caller believes that there's, like, metal strips and stuff in the money. And
sure.
If you hold on to the money
for
more than a month, it'll be able to time that.
I like this.
This money will know when it's changed hands.
This is a good conspiracy. I like this.
And if you hold on to it too long, it'll auto-tax.
Oh, no.
Real quick, what that man was talking about on the money. This was on a program the other day. One of the things with the money, with the strip, when you get it, if you don't pass it on within a month, you'll be taxed on it.
Oh, it'll be devalued. I reported that 3 years ago from the Federal Reserve Board of Virginia's website.
A real good person to have on would be Donald McIlvaney, intelligence advisor. If you could get him on and interview him, he's very well versed on all of this.
I have no idea how the timer of a month would start.
Love it.
If I were to buy something with a bill, this is ridiculous.
I liked it.
Anyway, I don't know anything about this Donald McIlvaney guy, but I did look into him a little bit, and I did find that his main website is just a portal to a gold sales outlet.
How's he doing?
I don't know.
Oh, so he's saying that maybe you shouldn't get paper money and instead you should get gold.
Yes.
So then he, of course, sells gold.
Yep.
That's very strange how that works, isn't it? It's so strange. Yeah.
It's almost these people, like these people with these completely nutty conspiracy theories about paper money always tend to sell gold.
It's super weird.
Yeah.
It's super weird how people who hate the Fed and paper currency love and also sell and profit off of gold.
Weird financial motivation.
Yeah. It's super strange.
So we go to the ninth.
Okay.
And I didn't find that episode all that satisfying. A lot of it was about the talking to that lawyer and just kind of spinning his wheels.
Sure.
Then I got in on the ninth, and I found myself very excited. Is that the right word?
Interesting.
Coming up in about, I don't know, 16, 17 minutes, we'll be joined by Jeff Singer and Dave Moore, who are on a local country FM in Colorado Springs. We're on, of course, on KWYD 1580 in Colorado Springs. But we're going to have them on because, of course, you heard last week they got suspended for criticizing the Dixie Chicks. And maybe you heard on the news that they got suspended for playing them, but we'll get to the bottom of it.
Alex just,
would you say they got canceled, if you will?
Alex just misspoke there, and he tried to cover it by insinuating that the media had gotten this story wrong, by making you think that the two DJs got in trouble for playing Dixie Chicks when maybe they got in trouble for criticizing them. Only Alex can get to the bottom of it
when he misspeaks. How could you know?
So these two guys worked for KKCS 102 FM in Colorado Springs.
Sure.
It's a station that they had to put in place a boycott on playing the Dixie Chicks songs after Natalie Maines had some comments at a concert that were seen as being anti-troop when she said that she was ashamed The President Bush was from the same state as her in Texas.
Good for the Dixie Chicks for being ahead of their time. Mm. You know, like yep. Now we're all ashamed of the United States, but they really got there first.
Obviously, this was an instance of everyone losing their damn mind and the right wing shitheads doing a dogpile on the Dixie Chicks. But some of the details of the story, particularly about this DJ situation, might not be what you remember.
Okay. Is this a clown sending, what's it, poison?
No,
again?
No, this isn't a Ryson.
This isn't a Ryson.
Elvis impersonators. Dueling Elvis impersonators.
Yeah. I was going to say, this isn't that?
Not quite.
Oh, okay.
So in terms of these actual two DJs, the story that I remembered was that they dared to play a couple songs from the Dixie Chicks, and that was enough to get them in trouble.
Sure.
An article from the Times Herald Record has some other details. Quote, KKCS had instituted a ban on the Dixie Chicks, who at the time had two songs on the charts. But two DJs at the station, Dave Moore and Jeff Singer, decided that 2 months was punishment enough. They broke the ban. At 6:15 a.m. on Monday, May 5th, 2003, they locked themselves in the DJ booth. They started with Long Time Gone, and they didn't stop playing Dixie Chicks tunes until noon.
Was Adam Sandler and Brendan Fraser there? What in God's name happened?
Yeah, I didn't remember that was part of the story.
I don't remember Airheads being real life.
Yeah, even though I agree with the point of what they're doing.
No, totally.
I totally understand that that's a brazen act of insubordination.
Listen, you guys are heroes, yeah. But we can't just not do anything yeah. about this.
Ultimately, what happened is that the station manager, Jerry Grant, gave the two a choice to either continue playing Dixie Chick songs and get fired, or stop, unlock the studio, and be suspended for a few days. And they chose to end the occupation of the station.
So courageous.
I have a huge problem with everything surrounding this story, but I'm not sure I disagree with these two TJs getting a slap on the wrist for essentially, like you said, living the movie Airheads.
Yeah. I mean, come on. You can't live the movie Airheads. You just can't do it.
It's like what they did.
Even in the movie Airheads, they couldn't live the movie Airheads.
Like, what they did was for a good cause,
sure.
sort of, as we learn later. But and I support the statement of
sure.
playing their music.
Censorship is dumb no matter what.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't want them to be punished too harshly, but you can't lock yourself in a radio booth and pirate the transmission and expect nothing to happen.
There is that.
Yeah.
There is that.
Yeah. Yeah. If I were your boss.
But if protest is, there's consequences.
I think that is actually a pretty restrained response from the boss.
Totally.
Couple days suspension.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I'm almost wise, too, because if he'd overreacted, everybody would have turned it into a cause.
Totally.
But giving them a slap on the wrist is almost insulting to them. Like,
yeah.
Your protest was worth nothing more than take a day off.
And from some of the articles that I found, it seems like the station manager guy, was like, yeah, we were getting ready to start playing their music again anyway, but we wanted to do it on our terms,
sure,
and
sure.
this wasn't the way we wanted to
right,
do it.
Right.
And
these guys stole our thunder.
I could see how this would be like, you know what, it's ultimately the audience and it's been 2 months.
Sure.
The audience is kind of over it. The rage cycle has run its course.
We got it. Freedom fries. Let's move on.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
And so the station's getting ready to be like, let's go back to normal.
Let's just pretend this isn't
Landslide.
Happening.
People like that song.
Everybody's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And these guys just jump the gun.
Yeah, which is also interesting, and maybe probably for the best. I bet they got a shit ton of free press out of that. He even suspended them, and then they came back, and everybody was like, yeah, you guys are back on that.
I don't know. I don't know if you remember those dudes' names.
Oh, no. They're titans of the industry
now. I just said their names. You don't remember
them. Dave Grohl and...
I mean, it's a story that you kind of remember.
Yeah.
In as much as I do remember that there were some DJs who got in trouble for playing Dixie Chicks.
Sure.
I don't remember those details.
No.
I don't remember their names.
No.
I don't think that they're Kevin and Bean.
They have not gone on to live echoing throughout history. That's true.
Yeah. So I don't know if the publicity stunt angle of it worked out as well as you imagine. But yeah.
Yeah. Good for that.
Anyway, when I heard that they were going to be on, I thought, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
This is nonsense.
This should be fun.
This is exactly the kind of thing that I think is really fun about going back to 2003.
Totally.
These long forgotten sort of, I don't want to call it trivial, because what happened to the Dixie Chicks was so unfair. I'm not want to minimize that at all.
Of course.
But in terms of Alex's world, this is trivial. Compared to we're all gonna die.
Right. We're fighting the literal devil. Also, these two guys got suspended for playing the Dixie Chicks.
Yes.
So there's a little bit of a disconnect in stakes, if you will.
And it's a time when, like, these guys are probably not super political but they don't know who Alex Jones is. He has a nationally syndicated
show. Right.
Why not go on it?
Right. So
you get this weird intersection of things that would never happen nowadays, and I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
Anyway, just to check in on where Alex is at with the NRA.
How are they doing?
They would then deny that S-22 even existed, the gun registration bill. But now it's come out that it does, and they weren't going to warn you about it. So they're loyal opposition. And it makes sense. I mean, the NRA gets more members when things are going badly for the Second Amendment. They get more signups.
Yeah. So Alex doesn't like the NRA at all. He hates them.
I don't like this. I don't like going into the past as much as you do, because I find that his behavior is less egregious and thus makes me feel more like I'm saying stuff where I'm like, I mean, yeah, that's a good point. I don't like it. Because his behavior is still egregious. Well, it's just under the surface.
No. But also, here's the thing that we need to really finally delineate.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, opposition to the NRA is great.
Sure.
Opposition to Bush is great.
Sure.
We can agree with those things.
Agreed.
As sentences on a piece of paper.
Correct.
Now, the motivation for why Alex is against both of those things is different than what we think.
Totally.
And so I actually think that you can be... What you're experiencing is exactly what lured a lot of people who wouldn't agree with Alex's radical politics into thinking he was more in the center than he actually is.
Totally.
You know, you think like, oh, this guy doesn't like the NRA.
Right.
Maybe he's one of these people who's kind of conservative but kind of gets it. No. He's more extreme than
totally.
The NRA.
I know. That's it.
He's attacking.
It's so frustrating.
Way far to the right.
I know. It's so frustrating that he could get away with it conceivably.
Yeah. And he does.
Know?
He does.
And he does, as we're talking about him now. So obviously got away with
it. And I think it worked really well for him at this era.
Yeah. He nailed it.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that is really good for him, too, is this branding. And, you know, we're talking about this, like, attacking the NRA from the right because he is a extreme right-wing person.
Right.
And attacking Bush because he's extremely far to the right of Bush.
Right.
Not because he's to the left or he's in the center.
Right.
People could get that impression, and Alex plays into that impression.
Totally.
And in this next clip, he's talking about how people call him a commie because he's against Bush.
Again, I will make the admission here. I'm pro-gun 110%. It's an absolute right. I'm pro-sovereignty. I'm pro-family. I'm for low taxes. I'm for abolishing the Federal Reserve. That means, in today's dialectic, that I am a ultra-communist. Now, if you're a neocon who's an admitted Trotskyite, if you're a beatnik who has a national talk show, who's an admitted
Savage.
Communist, you are now a conservative. And I'm not being sarcastic. I am now a communist because I'm pro-America. They, the communists, learned how to flap American flags in our face and talk about how conservative they are. They are now the conservatives.
See, Alex has this superficial defining himself by opposition to things that actually does fool a lot of people.
Yeah.
I'm opposed to Bush, and now everyone calls me a commie. When I was against Clinton, they called me a hard right extremist.
Like, right.
No, you were, and you still are.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know if I ever had anybody who I heard say, like, Alex is a communist because he's against Bush.
No.
I just think that people thought he was more sensible than you might think on first blush.
Right. And if you are an enemy of any part of the right wing, you will be called a communist, regardless of anything you may or may not have ever said or believe.
Possibly by other people in the right wing.
Yeah, definitely.
Like Alex is calling Michael Savage
a commie. Exactly. No, definitely that.
This is
That's
just
what I'm saying.
Bickering.
Yeah, it's just whining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that there is a pretty key problem there, too, though. And I do think that it's something that I notice about Alex, and that is the defining self by opposition or by others' response.
Yeah.
When he talks all the time about knowing that he's right because people are attacking him and stuff, it's like, that's not a reliable metric of, you know, I'm right because everybody hates me. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Does that mean that ISIS is right?
Yeah. No, if he goes to therapy one time, the first question is just going to be like, how do you define yourself? And he's going to talk about everybody but himself, and he's going to be like, no, but like from the inside, and it's going to be 6 years of constant talking to just even figure out where he starts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So these DJs come on, and I got to say, is a little bit of a different style for Alex. He opens the interview by asking a tough question.
Okay.
Let me just get this out of the way up front. Was this a stunt you guys pulled with management?
No. Absolutely not. No.
Nope.
All right. Well, we did it. Good journalism, everybody. Let's go. Let's wrap it up and go home.
That's certainly better journalism than he normally does.
It is. It is. It is very much better than a leading question like, so, how long has your management been evil and in the pocket of the devil and the globalists that have been trying to oppress you?
I think Alex's bedside manner leaves a little bit to be desired there.
There's that.
In terms of like, was this a stunt? No. Shit. No follow-up questions.
I was going to say, that does have the feel of like a, maybe if I just surprise them aggressively, they'll be tricked into answering honestly.
Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I think Alex had been presenting, and I think it's what a lot of people felt, was that this was a principled stand that these DJs were making.
Yeah.
That it was, they were opposed to the ban, and they played this music as a way of being like, no,
totally,
we believe in free speech.
Pirate radio, Vietnam War, we're doing it all over again.
If you listen to them, it's very clear that that's not the case.
Okay.
They did not agree with what Natalie said. They agreed with the ban. They just thought it had run its course.
Due to a majority, if not all of our listeners a couple of months ago saying they did not want to hear the Dixie Chicks on our radio station because of what Natalie Main said about our president over in London. So it was starting to turn the other way, like, can you start play the Chicks?
Yeah, and we had requests for them and everything, so.
But we decided we are for our troops 100%. We're for the president 100%. But we're also for the First Amendment 100%. Should Natalie Maines of the Dixie Chicks said what she said? Absolutely not.
Well, wait, America, I mean, in America, you've got the First Amendment. That's what the military's for, is to defend our constitutional republic.
That's right.
And just this whole blacklisting, this whole demonization of the Dixie Chicks over this has sent shockwaves across the country, a giant chilling effect, and America's going in the wrong direction here.
Well, but they were fine with this for 2 months.
Yeah.
They were fine.
Yeah.
Until the tide started to turn and people were like, we want to listen to the Dixie Chicks.
Didn't you read the First Amendment? It has an expiration date of 2 months.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this from a like station management perspective. Like, do they have the right to just say, like, I don't want to play this person's songs? I don't. If they don't have a contract that they have to play, maybe it's shitty.
Yeah.
If you're, you know, not playing someone's music because of a political reason.
Yeah.
But like,
it's dickish.
If you're a metal station, you're not required to play reggae. Right? I mean, like,
I don't know, Wyclef says something anti-Bush, then you have to play it. And so it is a protest to not play it.
What if this is, like, we're talking mid, late 90s.
Sure.
You got an alternative station.
Uh-huh.
But you hate Peanut. Just personally.
Just personally.
Do you have to play 311? Like, if you if you're a station manager and you just have a personal problem with Nick Hexum, do you have to play 311?
I don't think so.
I don't know. It's weird. And certainly I'm opposed to politically just saying like, no, I don't.
Sure.
Your politics are such that I'm not going to play your songs. But like, I mean, if I was going to be impressed by these DJs having any interest in the First Amendment, then their actions would have probably come earlier.
No, it is a little bit like,
this is just, I've decided that it is no longer popular for me to suppress this speech.
Yeah. I mean, it's like if Barnes & Noble was like, we're not going to carry Jane Austen. Mm-hmm. We're just not doing it. I remember her comments about Bush.
Mm.
And so we don't carry it anymore. And then 2 months later, they're like, we'll put Jane Austen back in there. No big deal.
Yeah, this new Jane Austen novel is pretty hot. People like it. So, yeah, this is pretty much exactly what they say. They're just like, the listeners wanted them to come back.
It was good.
We listened to our listeners, and the listeners said they didn't want to play it, so we listened.
Well, that's good, but I do want you guys to go back and get on the radio and go, you can tune into Alex Jones at 1580. Will you do that for me? No, seriously, sure. Guys.
Was that a joke?
No.
No.
He said no. Seriously, guys.
I think that was not a joke.
That was very much not a joke.
Guys, please give me a plug. Please.
That wasn't even like one of those jokes where you laugh, but you're hoping they'll be like, no, we're totally going to do that. And you'll be like, no, that wasn't what I was trying to do. I was just making a joke. It wasn't that. It was like, hey,
Hey,
plug me on your show. Hey, no, guys, seriously.
Hey, guys, you made a lot of news with that suspension, yes. And you might have more listeners right now, and could you please plug me?
Yeah, it is nice to know that clout chasing, still strong back in 2003.
Oh, yeah, he was an early adopter.
Yeah.
So Alex has, it's fucking clear, he doesn't really spell it out, but it's really clear that he thinks that there's a conspiracy afoot. So here's the conspiracy. Clear Channel own a bunch of radio stations.
I already believe it.
Right?
Yeah.
So Clear Channel own a bunch of radio stations and also a bunch of concert venues.
True.
So what they have done.
And billboards?
They have manufactured a whole crisis where the Dixie Chicks get kicked off these stations that are owned by Clear Channel, and then they go on tour and they have they sell out all their shows at these venues that are owned by Clear Channel. Now, I would suggest that the Dixie Chicks don't need to sell more tickets.
No, they were doing all right. They were huge.
They were about at the peak of their power.
They were huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. They were huge.
One of the reasons that it was so nuts that everyone was like piling on them in the right wing is they were in the top three, top four country music acts in the
world. They were killing it. Yeah. That's why they had to be taken down, because they had too large of a platform to criticize Bush with.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Alex tries to lay out this conspiracy to the DJs. Now, for this conspiracy to make sense, there's two things that need to be true.
Yes.
One, this needs to be a Clear Channel station.
True.
Two, the venue where the Dixie Chicks are playing needs to be owned by Clear Channel.
Yes, both of those must be true for this conspiracy to have any effect on them.
Ooh.
Now, I have read that, is your station Clear Channel?
No.
Okay. I mean,
they said that simultaneously.
They've been asked that a lot. Clear Channel, a big part of their business isn't just playing music; it's putting on concerts. Is it true, from what you know, that Clear Channel is actually involved in promoting Dixie Chicks concerts?
I don't know if they are the promoter behind the Dixie Chicks concerts or not. I know they do. They have several venues across the country, including a couple in Colorado. And they have Clear Channel Entertainment, which promotes concerts, but I'm not sure if they're one of the promoters for the Chicks or not.
I don't know. Have the Dixie Chicks played at their venues?
Their venue in Colorado is fairly small, though. The Dixie Chicks will be playing at the Pepsi Center, which is a large venue. That's where the Nuggets and the Avalanche play.
Yeah,
and
I have read that they've been involved. So could it be a larger publicity stunt? Boy, they get all this attention. Oh, I guess we won't know, but you know, in radio, people do pull stunts, and we're trying to find that out.
People do pull stunts.
True.
But this is falling apart.
Usually it's
this
more like
is going
usually it's more like payola or something
sure.
like that.
Sure.
Not necessarily this.
I think that this interview is fascinatingly fallen apart.
Yes.
Because these DJs are not free speech crusaders in the way that Alex maybe would have liked them to be.
It would have been great.
And now they have refuted twice in the span of about a minute.
Correct.
Pillars of his conspiracy that Clear Channel is trying to boost their live ticket sales for one of the most popular acts in the world by pulling a stunt where they get kicked off radio stations.
Yeah. If you were Alex and you had like a top three of things that you hoped were true, at least one of those should have been true.
Man,
none of those.
No.
Oh, that's not good.
Nope.
At the very least, you're not a data point for the Clear Channel conspiracy.
So I think Alex is recognizing some of the similar things that I am, and that is that this has fallen apart.
Sure.
And so he decides to retreat to attacking these guys.
We support Natalie Maines' right to say whatever she wants. So that's what you said. We don't agree with what
you
said by any means.
Let me ask you a question. You say that you guys supported then the takeover of Iraq.
Well, you know,
we support our troops.
Yeah, and it's hard to say whether we're there because I don't know, you know, personally whether or not there are weapons of mass destruction and whether there's a necessity to do what is being done. I'm not an expert on that.
But you're supporting the troops, and we understand that.
Troops,
but
absolutely.
Wouldn't you say it supports the troops not to sell Saddam, VX, and Sarin, and then ordered our troops to blow up the bunkers, and then when they breathe that stuff in 91, to not give them treatment? Because that's a big deal. That really hurt the troops right there.
Well, that's true. Of course, we're just country DJs, and for us, it's about the music, mainly.
Yeah. They are just country DJs. This is unfair. This is a...
I I like that defense.
Yeah.
I would like to use that.
Yeah, okay. So my position is that I support the troops, and your rebuttal to that is making me own literally everything the government has ever done? Great. How about I tell you that I'm a country DJ, and we move the fuck along, because... I'm not going to litigate every decision the government has ever made.
What a great comeback. I'm just, because what do you expect from a country DJ? I'll tell you what, complicated and clear-eyed views of global international politics? No.
Yeah,
I'm out.
And they even express, like, we have some fun on our show, we play music.
Yeah.
We're not all that political, certainly. Coming on a show, you certainly confuse us.
Why did you say all those words?
Well, I think that is Alex just trying to take something from the interview
because
it went so poorly.
Yeah.
Clear Channel conspiracy didn't work out. These guys aren't heroes. They're kind of just morning zoo dicks.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're if you have been deflated so completely by these assholes, then there's also that little bit of Alex's like resentment coming out of like, you didn't give me what I want, so I will take it from you. That kind of feel. Yeah.
So I think that there's a little bit of a codependency with the audience, and this caller who calls in after the interview wants to make Alex feel better and try and help him with that Clear Channel conspiracy.
Okay. First of all, the name of the promotions company is SFX Entertainment. That's promoting the Dixie Chicks concerts. You go to the website, it comes up Clear Channel Entertainment.
Yeah, that's what I've seen that. Actually, who was it? It was Reuters ran an article like 2 weeks ago on that. Yeah, SFX, and it's Clear Channel. Mm-hmm. And then they start the ban, which then makes it all go down. Everybody suddenly wants it. Then they make more money off of it. But here's the big scam. It doesn't matter. It still creates a chilling effect for everybody else. Ooh, you better not speak out, because then you'll be banned, and people never even know it was a scam.
Yeah. Second thing, I just kind of wanted to gloss over that.
Does that make you mad?
Yeah, it does. It really does.
Should.
It does. It really does make me mad.
SFX Entertainment is Live Nation.
Yeah.
That was bought by Clear Channel.
Right.
And then got spun off into its own thing again. Yeah, I don't know. I couldn't go back and figure out if the Dixie Chicks, all of their events were... run through Live Nation.
Sure.
I don't know. I don't think. And I also don't care. It doesn't prove any conspiracy.
I was
going to
say, on the list of, again, I believe we are at this moment fighting the literal devil who is destroying all of Iraq in service of destroying all of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So what Clear Channel's doing about the Dixie Chicks promotions?
We're trying to make a few extra bucks on tickets.
I mean, yeah. Whatever. Go for it, Clear Channel.
I would say that I'd be willing to stipulate and not accept as true, but I'll just go ahead and not even fight it.
Sure.
That Clear Channel, by virtue of a Live Nation, is doing ticketing for all of the Dixie Chicks.
Sure. Team. Sure. Why not?
That still doesn't prove the conspiracy. And Alex is acting like hearing that is like, aha, slam dunk.
True. Now, I won't put it past the recording industry. They pull off some bullshit all the time.
Yeah, man.
So
I saw Josie and the Pussycats.
Yeah.
That movie was...
The whole industry's bullshit. I get it.
With scandal.
I get it. All of these conspiracies.
So a caller calls in, another one, and he's got a theory that sometimes Alex's show is being blocked out by waves.
Okay.
I think sometimes when you come on air, they try to block you out, too, because you hit so much truthful points.
What do you mean they try to? What do you mean they try to block us out?
Well, I know frequencies. I know other listeners in the area who listen to you at the same hours. Like, let's say you're listening to you late at night, they can't get you in too, and it'd be a frequency and you can hear it. But I don't know if they try to block you out or what. But sometimes I call other people and they get in the same thing too.
But you can listen. You can hear us fine during the day, though.
Fine during the day, but at nighttime when people are home and want to listen to the radio. Yeah, everybody I talk to gets the same blockout. They can't get you in.
Yeah, well, that's probably just because AMs aren't as strong at night. Listen, thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Great. Great.
What a bad job by Alex. What a bad job. I just wrote down, what do you mean they block us out? Like, Alex said, what do you mean they block us out? Not... Obviously, they block us out. They're always trying to block us out. They've been trying to block us out since I started because I know too much.
Well, I think I think Alex realizes there's not money in that, probably. And the only action you might end up precipitating is harassment of the stations that do play him.
That's true.
And you might end up cutting in. You might bite the hand that feeds.
Sure,
there.
Sure. Can't do
so
that.
So this might actually just be something like, it's not even worth it to try and convince
Spin
people.
This into, yeah.
Yeah, we're under attack. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to end up fucking with the affiliates.
Right,
or something.
Right.
No good. So Alex gets down to describing his enemies. See if you hear the devil in here.
Okay.
It's not a dictatorship of Bill Clinton or George Bush. They're just puppets. It's a dictatorship of the military-industrial complex that was bankrolled and founded to run this country by the private European banks. There's no fight between the EU and the UN and America. It's all owned by the same private shareholders. The Warburgs, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers. The Dutch Royal Family, the British Royal Family, the Bilderberg Group, the people that meet and publicly call for open world dictatorship.
So that sounds astoundingly terrestrial.
Yeah.
That sounds like business interests who have an idea of working together to create a worldwide dictatorship tyranny.
Yeah.
It does not seem like it's people who are in the employ of the devil who has contacted them via transdimensional demons and offered them life extension technology.
Right.
If they carry out an elaborate and hyper-complicated plan to slowly and orderly kill off humanity. Should they fail to do that, they have a backup plan to just really super bioweapons and kill everybody off. It seems like this is a guy who wants to at least be taken seriously as a not science fiction writer.
Yeah.
His improvised storytelling is much more like Grisham at this point,
yes,
as opposed to to Philip K. Dick.
Yeah, this is The Firm. That's what this is. This is, it's fighting against powerful lawyers, taking over everything. No,
It's not magical realism.
No. Indeed, in fact, it seems like his biggest problem is ultimately what the end result of capitalism always seems to be, which is staggering wealth and inequality leading to an aristocratic business class.
I'd love for you to go back in time and talk to him about that.
That would be interesting.
So that caller who's talking about Alex being under attack through waves, right?
Sure.
Man, I thought he was nuts.
Oh, have we changed our mind already?
U.S. terror plan called Cuban Invasion Pretext. U.S. military leaders proposed in 62 a secret plan to commit terrorist acts against Americans and blame Cuba to create a pretext for invasion and ouster of communist leader Fidel Castro, who they put in. No, they use the war against the communists as a way to warp the minds of our military men and our CIA and get them to do evil things and set up a culture of evil, which is now used for narcotics trafficking and money laundering and white slavery, every other evil you can imagine. And it goes on to talk about...
It's a scalar attack.
Too much truth. Now, Alex, he plays a song and then he comes back from break and he's like, yeah, you know, we're in Texas and the satellites in Minnesota. So sometimes, you know, there's problems. He's very just like, it happens.
It happens.
Yeah.
It's part of the gig.
Mm-hmm.
That's fair.
But could be an attack because he's telling too much truth.
Possible.
So Alex has an article in the LA Times that he's been bringing up a little bit. And this has to do with our old boy, Joseph McCarthy.
Oh, boy.
Continuing with the news, despite McCarthy, Red Peril really was. John Maroney, LA Times. And it goes on. It says the document shouldn't be allowed to undermine the important historical fact that Soviet communism was a very real threat to U.S. defense and freedom. And the anti-communist fight waged in the country was a moral one. Even though the Communist Party succeeded in seducing an estimated 250,000 Americans to its ranks over the course of 40 years, it now says that the documents released show that McCarthy was right.
This article from the LA Times is an opinion piece, and Alex is actually lying about the main thrust of the article. The author, John Maroney, is arguing that there was a point to opposing communism during the Cold War, but the actions of people like Joseph McCarthy gave that opposition a really bad name. Because McCarthy was an opportunist, fraud, and demagogue. Even in that sentence, Alex reads the words, quote, the documents shouldn't be allowed to undermine the important historical fact that the Soviet communism was a very real threat. Like, those words don't make sense.
Sure.
Aren't his listeners curious why this article is arguing that documents would possibly undermine that notion if this article is about vindicating McCarthy?
Possible.
The headline literally starts, quote, despite McCarthy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Those things are in this the headline and everything because these documents that got released in 2003 were a record of secret hearings that McCarthy held with witnesses prior to them making public appearances, and he was attempting to intimidate them.
Yeah, yeah.
From an article about the documents from the BBC, quote, many had only tenuous connections with communists through family members or book clubs where Marx was read or unions with left-wing leaders. The new documents paint a picture of a senator out of control, summoning witnesses at short notice and browbeating them with the threat of imprisonment or public disgrace. But it was noticeable that those he could not intimidate in private were often not called in public session.
How shitty is our government press that they're like, these documents show Joseph McCarthy was unhinged. Uh-huh. Like, I don't know if you were alive when he was around.
But it's a new. They reveal a new level of artifice and craft.
Sure, like, sure.
The articles that I was reading about this really laid out how different he behaved in the public hearings and these private ones.
Sure.
And there was kind of, it almost feels like a feeling out process. Like that last sentence there, you know, the people that wouldn't back down to him typically weren't called for the public ones.
Right, right,
because
right.
That doesn't create the public perception that he's looking to grandstand with.
Sure, sure.
Also from the article, quote, according to Senate historian David Ritchie, the private hearings were more of an inquisition, using circumstantial evidence, hearsay, and intimidation to force people to acknowledge his point of view. The documents that came out in 2003 paint Joseph McCarthy as an out-of-control lunatic trying to run a witch hunt. And this LA Times editorial is an attempt to remind readers that just because McCarthy really sucked, that doesn't mean that Soviet communism didn't exist.
Hey, Torquemada, what do you say? The Inquisition.
If you were really someone who was opposed to communism and you'd read this article, you couldn't come away from it, honestly, with the position that it vindicated McCarthy. The article literally says, quote, many seem to have forgotten that the Communist Party was dedicated to replacing our democratic form of government with a totalitarian state similar to what existed in the Soviet Union. McCarthy and those who exploited his excesses are largely to blame for this. According to Maroney, McCarthy is a detriment to the opposition of communism. Essentially, the only two conclusions I can come to about Alex's coverage of this article are the following. One, he didn't read the article, and he thinks it actually says that McCarthy was totally cool, and he's just making up what the body of the text says. Mm-hmm. Two, defending McCarthyism and the tactics of witch hunting is more important to Alex than actually being opposed to communism, which makes his anti-communism essentially tactical as opposed to something that's based on principle.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm not entirely sure what I think.
I was going to say, you just read Alex is also a detriment to anti-communism in the exact same fashion that Joseph McCarthy was. So naturally, he would want to defend McCarthy as well.
Yeah, it seems like
nobody's like, hey, you know what's great? The John Birch Society fighting communism. I think they really did a great job. Mm-hmm. I think they really got to the points and they really hammered it.
It seems like he is, you know, like idealistically and or ideologically opposed to communism and all this.
Sure.
But if he can't do it like McCarthy did it, he doesn't want to do it.
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. If I can't defeat sex trafficking with a daring sunlight raid, then I don't want to deal with it. I just want to make everybody else angry about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I get the sense that he would not be so opposed to communism if his route to do it was to be an economics professor or a researcher who got no fanfare and didn't get to do these bombastic public hearings like McCarthy, which is Alex's radio show.
Right.
If he wasn't able to make a show out of it, I don't know if he would be as interested.
If leftists weren't as academic and more just shithead screaming, we might have Alex on our side is basically what we're talking about here.
Maybe.
Yeah, it's possible.
So
he just hates theory so much, Dan.
Does.
He hates it whenever they get into theory.
Yeah. So Alex takes another call, and this guy has a decent point, and Alex has a terrible answer to it, and that is, why are we even talking about the assault weapons ban? It doesn't even come up until next year. 2004 is when it's up for renewal or let it lapse.
Sure, sure.
And so Alex has an interesting answer that I think is totally wrong and, on brand.
Hi, Alex.
How you doing?
I've reflected on some things over the last 24 hours, and there's several different points. First off, something dawned upon me. Why is the administration dealing with the assault weapons ban 15 months before the issue even comes due, in the middle of this climate with so many concerns about the war and so forth. Why even deal with that out of the blue so far in advance? That's strange.
Because they want to act like they're right when they activate some mind control fruitcake. You know, the Matrix is coming out, which they say is a big trigger.
Yeah.
I tend to agree.
So he tends to agree that there's probably going to be a shooting at the second Matrix opening, or second Matrix movie, because it's going to be a trigger. And then they're talking about the assault weapons ban stuff so they can be right in advance for this thing that didn't happen.
Right.
Cool. And this, this like, is a precedent to the way he engages with shootings in the future. Like, this pattern of thinking is there all along.
Yeah. That almost sounds like Norm Pattis, doesn't it?
Hmm?
The caller? Doesn't that voice almost sound like him?
I'm not sure.
Through a phone, I can kind of hear it, and I would love to find out that that was actually a young Norm.
No way.
Like, developing their relationship.
The vibe that I get from Norm from those early appearances is either, like, someone who legitimately doesn't really understand what Alex does, or somebody who really, really wants people to think he doesn't understand.
I don't know. It just sounds like we're like a TV show in our eighth season, and we start doing all the flashbacks, and it turns out our main characters all coincidentally met 20 years ago.
We've already done that, though. In the 2015 episodes, we heard Owen Schroyer call in as a fan.
That's true. What a weird world.
Yeah. So here, Alex is wrong about things that will happen in the future.
In Boston Logan Airport and four other airports, they put NASA brain scanners in to, quote, tell if you're agitated. In 1984, they didn't scan your brain. This is total information awareness, worse than 1984. Then they say, oh, but it's to keep you safe. It's to keep you safe, America. We just want to keep you safe. But the borders stay wide open, and they're putting the Baathists back in power in Iraq because they're good thugs trained by the CIA in the 70s and 80s.
I'm really interested. I know this is getting repetitive in these 2003 episodes.
Yeah.
But I'm really, really interested in what's going to happen when debathification comes around. Because he's hitting this note so consistently.
Yeah.
On every show, he's bringing up how the Baathists are in charge, and it's because that's who the government, the U.S. government, and the globalists want to be in charge.
He's so insistent about something that we know for a fact to be 100% diametrically the opposite.
Yes.
And he is going to eventually run into that brick wall driving at 60 miles an hour.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm so interested to see. Like, does he hit the brakes at a certain point?
Or does he just go straight through it?
Yeah. I don't know. So we'll see.
Yeah.
So another caller calls in.
Is he like the Roadrunner where he paints the tunnel on there and he goes through it, and you're like, what the fuck?
I feel like that metaphorically is what he does a lot of the time.
that's fair.
Fake tunnel.
Drive through it.
So a caller calls in, wants to know about underground prisons that are being built.
I wanted to ask you if you had any information on underground prison camps that they're developing. Because
yes, I have mainstream news articles. Inez, Kentucky poured concrete for 2 years under a giant underground old coal mine and built a supermax on top of it with airfields and everything. They're building giant prisons everywhere. It's the new economy, a giant prison economy where they literally own us, where torture is the order of the day and is a virtue.
See, that's very interesting because down here in Trinidad, we're having seismographic readings. And in Trinidad was a site of an old Japanese internment camp, and it has old mines, but they're getting seismographic readings, but there's no faults there. And so I'm going to collect as much hard evidence as I can.
Sir, your Denver International Airport has pictures of Nazis machine-gunning piles of dead bodies, satanic art everywhere, a giant FEMA camp on it publicly.
Sure.
Really?
Yeah, you ever seen the artwork in the Denver airport?
Bro. Yeah, so
this is very strange. This is very strange to listen to Alex be like, the prison pipeline or the prison industrial complex is going to eventually become what it is. Like, he's right on about the prison complex.
Mm-hmm.
And then to hear the crazier conspiracy theory from his caller, like, that weirds me out. We're living in a complete topsy-turvy world, because normally, nowadays, he would come out with something like, you know, the devil's killing everybody, and they're like, yeah, but maybe the devil is just trying to raise the corporate tax rate. Like, you know, it's a very weird inversion of the way this goes.
Yeah. It is true.
Yeah.
And speaking of like an inversion of the present, this next call is fucked up if you consider Alex in the present.
Okay.
Now, that's what I'm saying. We need to increase, you know, demanding that they bring these people to justice, the whole Bush administration and all they serf minions and bootlickers.
Well, let me ask you a question. You certainly know that Bush is just a puppet, though, right?
Right. We need to get his puppet master.
Well, I would agree that the Rothschilds and others need to be exposed. We've
they
got to first
to be
expose
exterminated
them.
Like they had a plan for everybody else. If it's good enough for everybody else, it's probably good enough for them.
Well, I'm not sure my audio's cutting out, but I appreciate your call, Omar.
Right. Your audio is cutting out.
Wow.
Sure.
Wow.
This caller said that they need to exterminate their enemies, and the puppet masters of the globalist puppets like Bush.
Jesus.
And Alex pretends that he didn't hear him and goes to break. When he comes back from the break, he makes a point to bring this back up.
I talked to the folks running the show. I wanted it because I wasn't sure. I heard what I heard from Curtis. Or no, it wasn't Curtis. Curtis is coming up. That was I was talking to Omar last segment from Michigan, and so I did hear what I thought I heard. My audio was low. Omar, let me explain something to you. Okay, I'm sure you're a nice person and mean well, and I appreciate your hard work, and you say you're waking folks up. But look, I've tried to make this clear, and this is what I truly believe and know, and I know what I'm talking about. I work on this probably harder than anybody else. Fighting the New World Order, defending my family, standing against crime, standing against evil. Have you not learned what I've said here? What history shows, the globalists carry out violent acts against their own institutions as a way to legitimize power, as a way to legitimize power and control and domination and the destruction of liberty. Violence is not the way to go. I will say it over and over and over again.
Now, I know that Alex says, like, politically, I want to kill
you in the future
or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and he does, he'll give lip service to the idea of nonviolence.
Right.
This is an instance where he clearly was caught off guard by this caller saying we need to exterminate these folks.
Yeah.
And then went to break and decided to come back, re-bring it up to stress that violence is not the way to go.
Dan, haven't you heard the old adage? If you're not a liberal at 20... you have no heart. And if you don't want to exterminate the poor at 40, you have no brain. That's everybody knows this.
There's a real sense that I get that Alex might be a little bit more keenly aware of how dangerous some of the people who are drawn to his worldview may be.
Possible.
I don't know though. It's foreign as hell.
Maybe he just doesn't have the. I mean, he's just more in a vulnerable position. You know, he's still got bosses at this time. He doesn't have complete.
Well, it's Ted
autocratic.
Anderson.
Yeah. Well, that's fair. But I mean,
he's
he still has to answer to someone. There is still someone. Above him, and now there is no one above him.
Well, his dad is HR.
I don't know if his dad is still alive. I think this is a psycho situation where his dad is
in his attic,
a skeleton.
I just think it's very interesting that Alex. It's still like obviously this broadcast is still incredibly irresponsible.
Sure,
there is a complete world of difference between.
Yeah.
Taking a step back to calmly and emphatically stress that this no violence is no good, it's not the answer, and Alex's long pornographic rants about slitting people's throats and talking about how all the globalists are already dead and all this in the present day.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to, that's such a like bullshit argument of cancel culture. No. Look at how people act when there are possible consequences. Look at how people act whenever you just know that consequences are available versus when you act when there are absolutely none to be done.
There's something to be said
for
that.
There's, it's there.
Yeah.
It's there. You act better.
So I think that this leads Alex
into... Or at least psychos do.
Alex, for the rest of the episode, he gets into a bit of a headspace where he's saying things that, like, a lot of it sounds pretty good.
Mm.
I don't believe him, but... and obviously because I know where his show goes.
Sure, sure.
Certainly don't. I don't
Living
think,
in the future is tough.
Don't think that he means it. But yeah.
We have just got to continue to be bold, to be loving, to stand against this evil. Hate is not going to power us. Hate is not going to get the job done. Now, certainly, you have a right to defend yourself against criminals and against people that are assaulting you and assaulting your family. But offensively, it is wrong to go after the illegitimate government because they want that.
That's the reason?
I guess.
It's really interesting for Alex to say that hate can't power their movement or whatever, because, I mean, I would say that that's one of the major problems with the right wing as it exists today.
Yeah, yeah. Because hate fuels their worldview.
Yeah, and I think it did. I think it did too for Alex in 2003.
Totally.
It's just maybe he wasn't even as aware of it. It's not as overt.
Yeah. Or he just casts such a wide net he doesn't even know the difference between hate and not hate.
Mm-hmm. And so he, you know, you got this headspace where you don't want to exterminate your enemies.
No, that would be
Alex
bad.
Just wants them to back off.
Sure.
Back off, globalists.
Sure.
We are not revolutionaries. We are restorationists. We want America, the Republic, back. We just want the globalists to stop what they're doing and to back off. And we know that when they see weakness, they attack. We know when they see ignorance, they move forward. And I want to advise the globalists right now. I want to give you some really good advice, and you can check. I've done 800 radio interviews since 9-1-1. 800 now. I've done my own syndicated show on AM and FMs all over the country.
That doesn't count as an interview.
I have a website that gets millions of hits a month.
Definitely
millions
doesn't
of individual
count as an
hits
interview.
A month. Let me tell you, for every 500 positive emails, I get one negative. And the people are so incoherent,
none of those are interviews either.
IQs are lower. I have done 800 interviews, and one out of 30 callers disagrees with me. Folks, let me tell you something, globalists. You're in a lot of trouble.
They're in so much trouble. Alex has good reviews, and people
so
often
trouble.
Don't find it worth their time to argue with him, I guess. But yeah, they just need to back off. And hey, there's good news.
I've got some advice for Alex.
Uh-huh.
Back off.
Why would he? They're winning or something.
Sure.
Now, I would say that if the globalists, when they see weakness, they attack, and when they see dumbness, they move forward.
Sure.
The preceding 8 years after this indicate that Alex and all of his friends are dumb and weak.
Yes,
right?
Correct.
Because the globalists didn't stop anything.
That is exactly what they proved.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
In 2003, it turns out there's not many globalists.
You know what's going on, and if you sit there and shake and cowered and sit there, you're delivering your children into a living hell. A hell on earth. Hades on earth. And I'm here to tell you that it's a handful, a few thousand globalist managers, a few dozen families that own this thing. They're counting on you being ignorant. If you find out they're counting on you being afraid and being cowardly, you have got to be men. You have got to be women. You have got to be strong. You have got to do whatever it takes to stand up against this evil and to speak out and to not be violent and to tell the truth and let them burn us at the stake if they want to in the arena. I'm ready. I believe what Jesus Christ said. I believe in decency. I believe in wholesomeness.
Wholesomeness.
Wholesome.
That's how I would describe his show in the present day.
Wholesome.
Very wholesome.
Wholesome.
Yeah.
Reminds me of the Buttercream Gang. And that's what it reminds me of.
Yeah.
That's who I think of when I think of Alex,
mm-hmm.
Owen, Harrison, Weitzer, the best Smith.
Yeah.
I think of the Buttercream Gang.
Yeah, this was just really weird because it's fill-in time, and it's just
sure.
a long rant, more or less, just
yeah.
about how, like, we got to be peaceful.
Yeah.
We can't be hateful.
Sure.
The globalists are in trouble because we're so popular. And you have to be strong, and we believe in wholesomeness. It's all goodness.
Yeah.
And it all seems to be in response to that caller bringing up extermination of the enemies.
It does seem like it's genuine, too.
I wonder, in a certain sense. I wonder if it's also in part because Alex was probably pretty excited about getting these DJs on, and it didn't go well.
Sure.
I wonder if that like plays into his mood a little bit.
Yeah. Since we know that, generally speaking, what comes out of his mouth is the result of how he's feeling.
Yeah.
As opposed to what's going on.
Yeah. And I think that maybe the fact that wasn't something he could build on at all, and he's just going to have to pretend that interview never happened.
Yeah,
now.
It's basically what he's doing, yes.
It's a mulligan or whatever.
Yeah.
I wonder.
That'd be interesting.
Anyway, one of the things that we discovered through every period of time that we've looked through, at least the last few years.
Sure.
Going back into 2015.
Right.
Even prior to Trump's candidacy, Alex loves Putin.
True.
And Russia. Loves him. Big strong man. I think you saw him on that horse without his shirt on.
Well, he had a stretch where he was like, it was bad that Putin kills journalists.
Mm. Yeah, that was a little farther back.
That was a little bit further back.
Yeah.
True. That was what, 2013?
Well, here's 2003.
Okay.
Look, folks, Putin got caught. Moscow police arrested FSB, the new KGB, planting bombs in a fourth Moscow apartment building. They took him to jail. They had him. Putin's police raided it, arrested the cops, took the bombs. That's a fact. You know, government has to blow up its own stuff as an excuse to crack down on you. Figure that out.
In the present day, Alex does not believe this.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
He does not believe that Putin was behind the bombings that were blamed on the Chechen rebels.
No longer an expedient truth to know about.
Now, I think that there is something interesting about this, and that is, when was the lie? Was he lying about it being a fact in 2003?
Yeah.
Or is he lying now?
Yeah. Or does he just not care?
I think he doesn't care.
Yeah, I mean, I think to a certain extent, like when you think about a lie, you do think about somebody with malicious intent, or at the very least, like desire to hide information or something like that. And to me, what I'm seeing from all of this totality now is just a man who just doesn't give a fuck if it's true or not or whatever. He's not lying. He just doesn't care.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's just beyond lying or not lying. He's just making up his own reality that he exists in from a moment to moment point of view.
Yeah. And there's some things that seem pretty consistently important.
Yeah.
Like him being left alone.
Yeah.
Christian supremacy.
Yeah.
Whiteness and guns.
Yeah.
And then he's figured out some sort of routines that work pretty well, like the vaccine lies and stuff that you just see him doing consistently. Yeah. Anyway, Alex has another caller.
And oh, geez.
I just keep this in because I think it makes Alex look like a dick.
Yeah, I want you to take 50 copies of Road to Tyranny and hand it out to everybody.
I only have one VCR. I can't copy it yet.
Need to buy another one, pay the $50, buy the blank tapes and do it.
I guess, yeah, I know, but I don't even have $50. I'm doing what
I can. Go to your neighbor. Get it. Whatever you have to.
All right.
What?
Wow. That is presaging his televangelism right there.
Yeah.
He doesn't get more televangelist than, oh, sell your home. Sell your home. Yeah. Ask your kids for money to give it to me.
Go to your
neighbor. I need a private jet.
Go to your neighbor to go get money to buy a second VCR so you can make copies of my movies.
Which you will give to your neighbor.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh boy.
Anyway, I thought that was asshole-ish.
That's real dickish.
Yeah, I can't imagine the level of narcissistic you have to be to have multiple follow-ups when someone's explaining why they can't copy your tapes.
No, I mean it's sales, you know? That's that like rich dad, poor dad, like don't take no for an answer shit. And you're like, back no, that's psychopathic, you nutbag.
Back when I worked in telemarketing, if your calls were monitored, like, you would get in trouble if you didn't have two rebuttals.
Yeah, exactly.
And that seems like what Alex is doing there, but it's not sales.
Yeah.
You're talking to a person.
Yeah, exactly.
But I guess it is sales.
About bullshit.
So we have one last clip here from May 9th. And again, It's Alex talking about his enemies.
Uh-huh.
There's no mention of the devil.
Are you sure it's not the devil?
It's like Monday's Night Ritter headline, Night Ritter newspapers. Neocons call for new world order. Well, it's not the neocons. You know, they're just the puppets of the day. When they say Ashcroft wants Patriot Act 2, no, the globalists want Patriot Act 2. Don't be diverted by just these low-level puppet nobodies. Be focused on the real power, the new world order bankers. God bless you all. Have a good weekend. See you back tonight, 9 to midnight.
Yeah, so it's New World Order bankers.
I mean, guess.
Multiple times in these 2 days, he clearly expresses who he feels he's up against.
Yeah.
And it's all terrestrial concerns. It's
God
not,
damn it.
It's not an elaborate conspiracy of dimensions. It's not,
no.
It's not metaphysical.
He didn't get any dreams when he was 10.
Nothing. None
he wasn't
of that
a
stuff
Satanist.
There. No.
Nope.
And I mean, like, this doesn't prove that he never talks about any of this stuff.
Sure.
But, like, a lot of the themes that you would think might have been important are not important.
And if they normally come up now, if he brings up something similar to these topics, there's always that personal element of, like, you know, I was a Satanist, you know, like that.
None of
thing.
That shit.
None of that.
None of it. No talk
Brutal.
About Epstein. No talk about cabals of secret child trading.
Not even
blood
any Bill
drinking.
Gates.
Oh, he does mention Bill Gates at one point.
Oh, does
point.
He?
Yeah.
But Gates isn't in there with the Rothschilds and the Bilderbergs, etc.
No, there's just a side mention of Bill Gates.
Yeah.
But, I mean, of course, he's been relevant for a long time and a philanthropist.
Alex and a piece of shit.
Alex hates that because it works counter to his political positions of doing everything he can to hurt the developing world.
Right.
Anyway, I enjoyed a little bit of this in as much as, you know, the Dixie Chick DJs were interviewed.
Jesus, what a bunch of dicks.
But
E-chicks.
And I think that it's certainly, I don't even want to know what Alex is doing in the present day, quite frankly.
Oh, no. Good God, no. No, no, nope. No, 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 no.
I'm conflicted about whether or not there's a need to cover
Jesus.
Present day.
Oh, my God.
We will see. We'll see.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
Anyway, whatever ends up happening, we'll be back.
Yes, we will.
But until then, we have a website.
We do have a website. It's knowledgefight.com.
Yes, we're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's at knowledgefight. Go to Ben Jordan.
We're also on Facebook.
We are on Facebook, iTunes, and if you could, please find a local charity or bail fund in your area to help out people doing God's work right now.
We'll be back, but until then, I'm Neo, I'm Leo, I'm DZX Clark, I'm Daryl Rundis. This podcast is secretly brought to you by Clear Channel in an elaborate conspiracy to sell tickets to Alex Jones's live cabaret review.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.